Eric Edwards and I were doing cable filming, and that sort of evolved into the desire to do a film, and that's where Property came from.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're in the studio with the godmother of independent film in Oregon. For half a century, she's been a filmmaker, author, journalist, and theater director. And along the way, she helped boost the careers of Eric Edwards, Hank Pander, and Gus Van Sant. Penny Allen, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you.
So, Penny, you're in Portland, visiting from your current home in Paris, and you've been working on a film in France, but the story is set on the other end of the country from Paris.
Well, it is the bottom of the map. It's still France. Yes, it's the film was shot in Agde, which is near Montpellier. And the town where we shot the film is called Agde, and it was there at the same time as all of the pirates were there. It was there. It's a very old city. 16th and 17th century. It's a very interesting and historical town.
Well, let's talk about your film. It's called Pushing Past the Bad. Give us a little rundown on this film.
Well, it's a film that is not like anything I've produced before. It is mostly in French with subtitles, of course, English subtitles. And there is an American woman who appears on the scene, and she, of course, speaks in English, at least at the beginning. She gets better and better as the film moves on.
So the protagonists in your story are Stan and Gloria.
Right, uh-huh.
And Stan is the head of a three-generation family that partly depends on the income from his petty crimes.
That's right, yes. And he really hates his life. It is not what he wants to be doing at all. His father was much better at that, but he is sort of crazy now and retired. So Stan, it has fallen onto his hands, into his head, and he really dislikes it really a lot. And so the movie sort of develops from that point, and then he meets a beautiful black woman in Agde, who is a kind of tourist, and so he falls in love with her, and he thinks that his life is going to be better, and that all of his fantasies will come true, and he will have happiness and love, and he does to a certain point, but then it kind of falls apart because the police begin to pursue him for a murder that was committed by his father. And that's sort of a Shakespearean kind of story. You know, so I'm not going to go and talk about all that happens after that, but that is the uncomfortable situation that he finds himself in.
So like you said, Shakespearean themes, love and family and honor.
Yes, but also something like finding out that your father is a murderer when you hadn't known it before, and he refuses to denounce his father, so it falls on him. So the police are after him, and they do eventually arrest him, and I'm not going to tell you the rest.
Okay. So what drew you to this story? How did it come together? How did it materialize?
One of the characters in the film, Werner, was a theater director, and someone told me that I should go to Agde and see one of his shows, and I did, and I thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen, really. It was so good, and that was the beginning of 8 years when I would go in the summer and see the show that he had created during the year. So we became friends, and of course, we talked a lot about all sorts of things, but he did have an interesting story about the person who lived next door to him, which was this man, Stan. And Stan would not speak to him. That family of 10, that they would not speak to Werner at all. And so it intrigued him, of course, because he would always like to get him to talk to him. And that is the only part of the reality that ends up in the movie. I didn't take anything more out of it, but that got me, you know, it really did. And so that is where that comes from. And there's a lot of tension between people in this movie, between the various people.
So I know your style, because you worked in theater as well as film, I know your style is very collaborative. How did the process come about working with these actors that you brought into the film?
Well, casting is an incredibly important thing. And I spent a couple of years casting this movie, you know, and failing it. And then I would have to find somebody new because the first one didn't work. And I really do enjoy the casting. And I have a fantastic cast in this movie, the best I've ever had. Everyone who has seen the movie always comes to me and says, "Where did you find those actors? They're so good." And it's true. They're all very good. And they, as to whether or not they are collaborative, I have a way of directing, which is that if someone sort of improvises something and does something, if I like it, I say, "We'll keep that." I don't feel that I shouldn't do that. And so we have lots of interesting little things that someone has done that we have kept. And in some ways, after we had finished making the movie, I said, you know, I think those little movements, those little things are the best part of the movie. And that's not me, that's you.
Well, one thing that I've noticed in your other feature films is the part that the landscape plays, whether it's urban or rural. And what role did the town and the coast play in this film as you were putting it together?
Well, the town is really interesting. It provided every location, really. The village, I guess I'll call it. The village is beautiful and, you know, full of exciting little corners and strange things. And I think it contributes definitely to the film.
Are you using a lot of metaphor in pushing past the bad? Walls are obviously they're physical, but possibly also allegorical.
Well, yeah, a lot of things in the movie speak, you know. And one of the things that is very important in the movie is this, first of all, I have to say that Stan and his buddies are active in petty crime at the very beginning of the movie. So we see them trying to rob somebody at night. And one of the characters likes to steal art, and he sees this tableau, it's a painting on the wall, and he's really drawn to it, and he puts it on his back, and he is stealing that. And I don't think I knew before mid shooting of the film how important that is going to be. And that is it's definitely a metaphor, you know, because that painting keeps moving around right to the very end, where it's moving around again, you know. So I won't say what that means particularly, but it's something that people certainly notice when they see the movie. There, you know, the house that we were shooting in, that we took over, actually, it's an extremely large house from the 16th century. And, you know, it speaks. It really does. You know, all you have to do is get the right thing into the picture, and then it says a lot that way. Eric was very good, and Eric was the leading cinematographer for this film as well as several of my past films, and he is brilliant, actually, for knowing what to do with every scene, every moment. And he does do it.
Well, I imagine. I mean, you know, Eric Edwards, he's an Oscar-nominated cinematographer, done some amazing films in the past. So this house that you filmed in, ancient house, in your film, it's the home of three generations living together.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I guess the term dysfunctional family might not quite live up to how this family has been involved in criminal activity for a very long time.
Well, not the whole family. It's really always the leading man. So it was the father. And then when he could not do it any longer, or when he was too crazy, then Stan had to do that. But other people in the family don't do that. They are provided with food on the table, because Stan does what he does. I don't know. So I don't want to say it's a family of crime. Not at all.
So the rest of the family doesn't necessarily know what the men are up to.
Well, they know what's happening. They know what's happening. But Stan is not asking them to participate at all. He occasionally says to one or the other of them that it would be nice if they would start to earn some money, so he didn't have to keep doing what he was doing. But the movie is really about that family, because they all participate in the life of the family, and they are very interesting, you know. So it is Stan and Gloria, the main characters, Gloria being the woman who arrives from the United States. But the family also is really important, and they dislike each other sometimes, and most of them dislike Gloria, who has come and taken their stand away from them, you know. So it's not just about petty crime or about people who are into petty crime.
But yeah, Eric Edwards came aboard. And you and Eric Edwards have a very long and fruitful collaboration. I mean, the two of you were collaborating on video projects for cable access back when cable access was a very new thing in the 1970s.
Right, exactly. But it displeased both of us eventually, because Eric in particular, because of the quality, which lacked, and he really wanted to have cinema quality. But yes, we have had a long time working together, and it's been very valuable.
So you mentioned Property, which was a fictional narrative, but just barely. It was inspired by an actual zoning fight in the Corbett neighborhood you lived in, just up the hill from Portland's South Waterfront. And you and Eric had been reporting for cable access on the meetings of the Land Use Planning Commission in Portland. So Eric wanted to work in film, in real film, and you wanted to do a narrative film. And several people from the artistic community came together. Hank Pander, he'd been working in theater. He worked in set design for your films. And a Rhode Island School of Design classmate of Eric's came aboard and did the sound, and that was Gus Van Sant.
Right, which is sort of amazing, and actually a joke some often when his name comes up, you know. And they would say, well, gee, what did he do? What did he do? And I said, well, he was, he held the, you know, the, well, anyway.
The boom mic.
The boom mic, yes, he held it, right. That's not what people expect me to say, right. Yeah. Everyone has to begin somewhere. But it, yes, it was sort of amazing, you know, because Eric really wanted to be in a film. And I had a story, because that story was developing around me, as you said, you know, with what was happening in the neighborhood. And then I also had access to lots of actors because of having done theater there. And what else could you ask for, really? You know, and that's how Property came about.
Well, I mean, you're known for making connections on the set, and one of the big connections was that on the set of Property, Gus Van Sant, running sound, he was introduced to the lead actor, who was Walt Curtis.
Right. Uh-huh.
And Walt had just published a chapbook, a fictionalized memoir. It was called Malanoche.
Right. That was pretty wonderful, the way that turned out, yeah.
And then the film version of Malanoche, directed by Gus Van Sant, came out in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're talking with independent filmmaker Penny Allen. She is the director of such films as Property, Pay Dirt, The Soldier's Tale, Late to My Mother's Funeral, and Pushing Past the Bad. You really started out in theater, in independent theater. And in fact, you established a theater troupe in Portland that was based in the French language. It was at Portland State University. Les Planches du Pacifique?
Well, Les Planches du Pacifique, yes. Uh-huh. That's true. But I didn't invent that group, but it was certainly something that was the beginning of my career of theater in Portland. But it's interesting that you go back to that, you know.
Well, it's because you were talking about the theater director in Agda. Mm-hmm. So you obviously, you go back and forth between film and live theater, and you're still interested in the stage very much.
Right. I haven't done it for a while, though. You know, it's not really back and forth, you know, but it's important to me. And obviously, in that case, Werner's shows really influenced me. So I do take notice.
So when you have actors on a stage, obviously there's different preparation from actors in a film, but you have that experience with actors building their character for a stage that might have very little set design, you know, very little context. It's just the people out there telling the story. So how did that prepare you? How did that prepare you being an independent theater for becoming a film director?
Oh, well, it was an accident, you know. It was because Eric Edwards and I were doing cable filming. And that sort of evolved into the desire to do a film, and that's where Property came from.
So you and Eric were trying to transition from video to film. You were at cable access, and you had a weekly program called Urban Free Delivery. And you had interviews, but you also made short films.
I haven't heard that for a long time. But yes, that was an important beginning.
So your first short film came out of that, The Didier Connection, was mm-hmm. your first short film, and it focused on a young French boy who was living in Portland.
Yeah, well, that short film has a strange history because I made something, you know, just sort of like the story of him in the neighborhood, and it was about 50 minutes long, something like that. And then it was shown, but then it sort of got lost. And truly, it was lost. And we had no idea where it went at all. And I was interested in doing something more with the material. And I've sort of forgotten now, but I think it's like 37 years later, Eric found it in his basement. And it was, you know, all moldy. But those moldy films can be saved, but only once. And they're baked, and the picture comes to the surface. But you can't do it again, you know, so that's what you have. And then by that time, with someone that I was working with in Paris, we re-edited The Didi Connection, and it was... in the beginning, it was like not so interesting. Didi Connection, it was very interesting, and it was just 12 minutes long, and it won several prizes. You know, it's quite amazing, and it was a it was an unusual film because we didn't have any choice. But all of the damage that had happened, we kept. You know, and so it's a damaged film with damaged pictures, and that adds something to it. It makes you reach back in the past.
Well, the second big collaboration that you and Eric did that was a bigger scope that you and Eric Edwards did was Pay Dirt, which was set in the Yamhill area of the Willamette Valley, and it's an area that in recent decades has become a hotbed of the wine industry, but But in the late 70s, early 80s, the winemaking pioneers, they were struggling. And in your film, the characters in your film, they find a side hustle that keeps the winery afloat that also ends up causing major problems for them.
Right. And that side, what do you call it, a side what?
Side hustle.
A side hustle. That side hustle was that they were also growing marijuana, which was a big deal then. I'm not so sure that it would be a big deal now.
Oh, it's been legal since 2015
right,
in Oregon.
Right, exactly. But at the time, it was a risk. And so, as you said, it caused all sorts of problems in the community, people who didn't really like what the family was doing.
Right. So hidden among the wine, the vines in the vineyard are these cannabis plants. And the film opens with an armed home invasion. Another Portland legend, musician and journalist Buck Munger played the main heavy in the film.
Right. What happened to Buck? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know.
He's not somebody I've kept in touch with. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, nowadays winery owners are competing with cannabis farms for workers to harvest their crops.
Right. It's like a chapter two or chapter eight. I'm not sure, you know, that story evolves as well.
You know, one of the things that's interesting to me, you moved to Paris in 1991. And if I'm recalling this, your first job was working for the Minister of Environment.
Right.
You had met him as a student in Paris.
Right, as an exchange student years before that. And, you know, we didn't even stay in touch, actually. But when I moved to Paris, I went to see him. And he was happy to see me. And he said, "You want a job?" Just like that. So I got a job, you know, in one day in Paris. And that was the beginning of something that went on for like at least 10 years, you know, working with him and others that he was working with in the environment. And it's not really the environment that is done now, not at all. One of the things that we did that was really the first and also the unbelievable had to do with the minister's awareness of the fact that Chernobyl, the building itself had blown its top off. And, you know, it was his idea that we should make our best to get a group of countries all over Europe to put a top on it. And that took about 2 years. And we went all over Europe, you know, talking to all of, you know, presenting the whole thing, and it actually worked. It actually happened, you know, because the top was built, and so it was safe again. And, you know, there was, with the top being open, it was releasing all sorts of horrible stuff all the time for a long time. Anyway, that was really an interesting experience, to say the least. And it's that's the kind of environmental stuff that we did. You know, trying to influence a government is really difficult, but we managed to do it, and it was good. And what I did after that was translation of books. I think I translated 3 books, you know, and each one takes about a year or so. That's what I was doing. And then at the end of that period, I got back into cinema. I made The Soldier's Tale, and I've been in cinema ever since.
Right, The Soldier's Tale about, it was inspired by when you were on an airplane in 2004 and just by chance you met a soldier on leave from Iraq.
Right.
And our listeners might be familiar with the story of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh,
a
guru back in the 1980s who came out to Central Oregon and took over a ranch near the town of Antelope. It inspired a Netflix series called Wild, Wild Country. And at the time, you were a caretaker. You had moved out from Portland. You were a caretaker at a ranch that nearly neighbored this, what was it, Muddy, Big well, Muddy Ranch?
Right.
So you were right in the neighborhood of the Rajneesh Param people who were, you know, taking over this area. and causing all of this distress, which culminated in a biohazard incident.
Mm-hmm. But I also wrote a book about that time, and there was a lot of the Rajneesh thing in the book.
Yeah, you wrote sort of a memoir. It was called A Geography of Saints.
Right, exactly. You know, so I was definitely doing something that was happening around me, yes.
And again, the caring of the land, that's a hot topic. It's a hot topic in Oregon. Land use planning was something that took off in the early 70s and has never stopped being a hot topic.
Yeah, and I was part of that, actually, in the 70s. You know, that is, you know, how I got into that subject that had to do with saving the neighborhood. You know, so that was very important to me. And that did not continue in the ranch, you know. But maybe the ranch area didn't need that. I don't know. But anyway, it didn't continue.
Well, when you consider that the ranching and the winemaking in the rural parts of Oregon are dependent in no small part on land use planning, on the urban growth boundaries.
Yes, yes.
It all ties together, really.
Yes. Well, I agree with you. I mean, you convince me easily. Right.
Well, what's next for Pushing Past the Bad? Have you got other screenings set up or any festivals, tour dates, anything like that?
Yeah, yes, I'm very active in that. And then our next booking is in London, as a matter of fact, which is really going to be interesting. You know, I hope that it will do well in the UK. And people are starting to ask for the movie, and, you know, I'm really eager to pass it on to a distributor, and, you know, so that I don't have to do that all anymore. You know, we had an avant-première, which is, a screening before the release of the movie. But we had one in France, and it was well received, to say the least. I was quite shocked. Truly, it was a full house, and so that's interesting. And, you know, I'm going to be interested to see how that translates in Portland.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And we've been talking with independent filmmaker Penny Allen. She's the director of such films as Property, Pay Dirt, The Soldier's Tale, Late to My Mother's Funeral, and Pushing Past the Bad. Penny, it's been wonderful to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about your films, is there a good place to look?
Oh, I don't know. Don't answer me that. I don't know. I really don't.
IMDb, let's say. Internet Movie Database. Well, thanks to Bill Dodge for his engineering assistance. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture.